Welcome back to another new NACE International podcast. My name is Ben Dubose. I'm a staff writer with NACE Publications Division, writing for Codings Pro Magazine and Materials Performance Magazine. We've got our interview series for both of those publications in process, looking at the impact of the coronavirus pandemic, COVID-19, on the corrosion control and coatings industries. And, well, our guest today can speak to both our Codings Pro audience and our MP audience. His name is Chris Tierney. He is the president and chief operating officer of coatings manufacturer Carboline. Chris, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Ben, thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. Appreciate the opportunity to participate. And before we get started, I just want to say thank you to NACE for all the good things you do for our industry. And we are a proud supporter and member there.
Absolutely. And we're glad to have you in our corner, without a doubt. Carboline has done a lot of great things. And I'll start you with the relatively obvious question, which is what the past month has been like. We're talking in early April 2020. You look at early March, COVID-19 was just beginning to come into focus. And of course, over the past month, it's come from something that we were a little bit aware of, making preparations, to now something that is dominating all aspects of life and business. So from Carboline's perspective, tell me, number one, when did you realize how significant this was going to be? And then secondly, what are some of the things that you guys are doing differently now as compared to a few weeks ago?
Yeah, great question. So we have a business in China and Southeast Asia, but predominantly China, significant size for us. And so we kind of had a heads up late January, early Feb that, you know, this was more than just a regional thing. But to be fair and in full transparency, didn't expect it to turn into this. I was still traveling around Europe and Asia that time of the year. I think when it started to really coalesce at the end of February, early March, and I think the new reality started to set in that this is not a typical bug. This is not the flu season. I would have said it's probably or first week of March where we started to realize this is dead serious. So that we started to kind of coalesce our plans as to what this might look like. But to be fair, again, and transparent, early March, we had no idea what this was going to look like. And it changed daily, you know, hourly in some cases. And now it's brought the end of our fiscal year, which is the end of May, you know, certainly into focus and question. And we're starting to look at Q1 and Q2 of our fiscal 21 with a completely different set of eyes. So, yeah, it's certainly brought a new reality to us, and that would set up in early March. That started to really set in.
So, obviously, folks know you for protective coatings. You've got a history within coatings, linings, fireproofing, lots of different facets within the industry, headquartered in St. Louis. So, not only are you guys producing your own products, but, of course, you interact a lot with your customers, your clients, various other people throughout the coatings and corrosion control industries. Tell me a little bit about what you've heard from them, your end users, because of course I'm guessing with you guys, you're able to at least somewhat stay operational, even if certainly social distancing, you've got more virtual things, I would assume. But everyone that I've talked to, at least their own operations are moving forward. But the other part of the equation, of course, is what the demand looks like, what the end users of your products are telling you. So where's the combination for Carboline in terms of how, number one, you guys are staying operational, but number two, how you blend that with what's certainly a very big shift in demand given the shockwaves of the pandemic?
Yeah, great question or questions. It mixed bag for us. March, when we started to grasp kind of the full reality of this situation, March was actually a very good month. We experienced exceptional growth over prior year, margin improvement. So March was one of our better months of the 10 in our fiscal year, which is interesting with the backdrop of the virus. We look now into April, May, of course, with a different lens. But we have a combination of things going on, as you well know. We've got COVID-19, which is, you know, is no small issue, and then we've got oil prices in the mid to low 20s. Exasperating the issue, as you know, most people in my industry, and I'm sure there's competitors that'll listen, would nod their head. You know, we're tied to oil and gas in a lot of ways, so that's concerning. The interesting part when we talk to our customers is that most of them are open for business. There's very few that have told us they've closed up. Now, some have closed some locations because of governance or state law, but most are open for business and are trying desperately to get their people to work and stay operational. The key segments we operate in are almost all within the essential services realm. So from a government perspective, things that we supply and service and keep running on a daily basis continue to carry on kind of unabated. There are markets like, of course, New York, Philadelphia, and others that where things are really difficult to operate in and shut down. Spain, because we are a global company, we are almost to a grind in Spain because of the government regulations. Italy, interestingly enough, if you're reading the mail or watching the news here, you'd think Italy is a ghost town, but Italy actually just had one of its best months of the year for us in March. Certainly different environment for folks socially, but from a business perspective, it was business as usual through March. April and May will change. So it's a mixed bag. France is shut down, but the rest of Europe is actually moving quite well. We've got some significant projects in the UK which continue to operate. So mixed bag depending where you are. Most customers trying desperately to stay open. We've been very fortunate, touch wood. We had one case in our plant in Norway where we had to close for a week, clean up and wait results, and the results were negative, so the plant reopened. We had to close one of our warehouses in Louisiana for a couple of days on a potential case, but that case, thank goodness, came back negative. We reopened. Potential case in our lab in St. Louis, again, results were negative, so we reopened after we disinfected. So we've been very fortunate, and as we sit today, we are 100% operational around the world, with the exception of Spain and France. So depending on where you are in the world, a different effect.
Is there any estimate that you have, or I guess everything is subject to change based on the data, but is there any sense for how long this period is expected to last?
I wish I could tell you that with some confidence. I'd be a very popular person if I knew the answer to that. My guess, and just looking at China as an example, so kind of ground zero of the virus, China's back to work. Our plant in Dalian is open. Our workforce is back. Local projects are starting to open up again. So if you look at that as an example, and I guess it depends on how well you follow the rules in terms of social distancing and all the rest as to how quickly you flatline and recover. I'm looking at another 90 days before we can even start to look at a new normal, because I think, given the damage to the economy all the way around, normal is probably going to be a thing of the past. I expect in 90 days we'll start to move around a little more, things will look a little bit more like we're used to. But that is head-on into the oil crisis. So if that doesn't repair itself, there's another set of complexities that I just don't have a real opinion on yet. I'm hopeful that Saudi and the Russians come to an agreement and oil gets back on the rise to something that we can all live with. If that happens, I'm expecting that our Q2 will be relatively healthy and that the rest of our fiscal year will be okay. If I'm wrong on the virus and wrong on oil, then of course it's another game.
Are there any things that industry leaders such as yourself or your counterparts at other companies, are there things that you can do to try and shift things back towards normalcy? Obviously, you can't control the virus, but in terms of how businesses operate, certainly I'm sure there are more things going on virtually at your company. Is there anything that leaders should be doing to try and make the economic impact not go away, but at least mitigate it to some degree?
I don't know if we can mitigate the economic impact, but I think what we as a collective, as an executive team at Carboline, have decided is there is a lot of people at home with a fair bit of idle time, and we shouldn't let that go to waste. We pride ourselves as being a leader in education. Of course, we do that in conjunction with NACE a lot of times. You use our facilities in St. Louis, which we're happy about. We do regularly corrosion schools, fire protection schools, rail schools, and we just launched an online version of our corrosion school just this week, actually. And we were a bit of a victim of our own success because we had a 500-line go-to meeting planned, assuming that that would be plenty, and we overshot the 500 and people had trouble getting on. So that was a real wake-up call to us that there is an interest in learning and an appetite for something to do other than sit in your home office wondering what's going on. In a very perverse way, we might learn something from this downtime and this virus, that there's a lot of things we can do virtually that we would have typically done face-to-face. And probably going forward, there's room for both. I don't think there's any substitute for face-to-face interaction, but online learning clearly has its place. So that's the one takeaway, and one bit of bright light that we've seen is that there is a way to get to people, use the idle time, and continue to educate the industry. So we'll continue to do that as long as we're kind of locked down as we see it now.
In terms of your own employees at Carboline, how many of them are working from home, and how many are coming in but maintaining social distancing?
Yeah, all of our plants are open and operational. We're running staggered shifts to limit the interaction.
Okay.
We're opening separate change rooms and washrooms so that we don't always intermingle. But that's five plants in the U.S. That's all our plants abroad. We're all open. In our corporate offices, there's probably three or four people in St. Louis that typically would house 90. There's probably about 10 in our Ardian lab, which would typically house about 60. There's about four in our Norwegian plant that typically would have 35 or 40. Similar in Italy. Dalian, no one in the office, everyone working from home in China, but the plant full. And then everyone else is working from home. Everyone that can is, and certainly we started off with voluntary work at home, and as the situation materialized to be much more severe, then we just started mandating work from home. So I would say if you looked at our 1,000 employees worldwide, maybe 100, and not even that, maybe 100 are working and the rest are working from home.
For those that are having to work from home and have jobs that are at least somewhat physical in their usual day-to-day, what are some of the things that they can do? I'm guessing training is something that they have time to do. Meetings, of course, Zoom has picked up, it feels like, not just across the industry, across the world. If someone that normally goes into the office or their plant, whatever it may be, is working from home for reasons related to COVID-19, what are some of the things that, even if it's not their day-to-day job, which is affected to some degree, their normal routine, what are some of the things, I'm guessing training is one of them, that they can do in the interim as long as they're on self-quarantine, so to speak?
Yeah, I think training's probably the number one issue. Anyone that can't effectively work from home is in a facility somewhere, as I just said. So they're there kind of an emergency only. They're supporting a customer, an order, or another critical function in the company. If they're not doing that, they're at home. And training's probably the number one. Of course, they're catching up. And in a weird way, it is kind of business as usual. My calendar has never been so full of meetings, but they're all virtual, not face-to-face. So I'm not sure from a productivity perspective whether we're gaining or losing here, but I think everyone's adapting quite well to staying busy. And we do get a lot of people helping out with other functions within our organization, offering to take some workload off them, if it's basic data grinding or data input. So there's been a lot of cooperation between the functions at Carboline, which is kind of nice to see. It is kind of what I would expect from my employees, but they've done it without having to ask. And everyone wants to stay busy, stay engaged. And you know what we're trying to do from the exec team down is just stay communicated. So we have a Monday morning update meeting with my exec team, and I put out a COVID-19/ State of the Union every Friday to keep folks engaged. And for 42 months since I took over as president of Carboline, we've had a standing one-hour town hall, which goes out globally, is recorded, put out on our internet for people to visit or revisit. And we've continued that, and we will continue it, just we're now doing it virtually. And we had 290 people on the line. Mm. Or 290 lines, rather, and some of those represent groups of people. So we're getting somewhere around 300 or 350 people every month listening, and then of course with time zones, you know, the Asians will listen to it at a later time, etc. So we're trying to stay in touch that way, and I think that helps a lot of our employees in a bit of a calming sense. They know exactly where we are, and we're very transparent. We tell them where we are, where we aren't, what's going on, how we're doing, and the feedback I get is it's comforting to know, you know. Even bad news, as long as you know it, versus making up facts in the void of facts. So we'll continue to do that and keep the employees busy. And any other projects we think we can purse out and people can help us with, we'll continue to do that as well.
I would think that if we're talking in 12 to 18 months, when hopefully, knock on wood, there's a vaccine that marks the end of this current crisis, how many of these types of steps do you think will stick around in the industry long term? Because you touched on this earlier, but I'm picturing a lot of logistics costs that could be saved if you have more virtual meetings and you don't have people having to come into the office or travel. Now, as you mentioned earlier, there is value in face-to-face in a lot of circumstances, so I don't think anyone is suggesting that traditional modes of business will go away, but there might be some opportunities long-term, not just from a health perspective, but from a business perspective, to keep some of these new ways of life around. And one thing that I've heard a lot as I talk to people in the industry is that a lot of companies wanted to adopt more of these virtual methods of communication, but it was kind of a slow process, and this has sort of expedited that. It's kind of forced people to jump in to the deep end and sink or swim. And fortunately, a lot of companies, certainly Carboline, it sounds like, are able to swim and adapting to this. And so I'm just wondering, long term, are there some of these that even after coronavirus has a vaccine, COVID-19 is done, if we're talking in 18 months, are there some of these new business practices that stick around?
Yeah, I think for sure the online learning. I think we have learned that that's probably more important than we thought. Because even with all of the schools that we run, we're not getting 500 people a year through face-to-face school. So that just tells me there's a need. So I think that almost certainly will stay, and we'll probably expand on that. I mean, I think from a best practice perspective, I think it does, to your point, it does make an argument that not every meeting has to be face-to-face, and you'd be quite effective, certainly through video conference, more effective than, you know, typical go-to meeting without the camera. But you can see people and you can get a feeling for their body language, and you feel like you've shared an experience, and that's been invaluable over the last few weeks as we've all been locked down. So I think we will do more of that in lieu of traveling, because we always did, and we didn't know there was didn't think there was a better way to do it. And then lastly, probably goes without saying, our state of readiness or preparedness will certainly be highlighted. We will, I think, continue now to stockpile masks and disinfectants and thermometers, and some of that best practice will probably stay in place. We'll probably take temperatures as people enter our plants well beyond, you know, COVID-19, just because it's the flu. The flu can be a bad influence in a plant, and someone could be sick with somebody else. So, you know, in every crisis, there's learning, and I think we'll take some of that forward, and it'll be part of our standard operating procedure as we get out of this and into the new world.
The last topic that I have, one thing that's been interesting this week, as far as, I know you guys are a global company, but at least here within the U.S., where I know you guys are based out of St. Louis, we've heard some out of D.C., certainly there's a big priority, politicians on both sides of the political aisle, in trying to revive the economy, stimulate jobs after we get out of this current crisis, or as we try to transition our way out of it. One thing that's been mentioned a lot this week by both Democrats and Republicans is an infrastructure bill that's been discussed for a few years and for various reasons has been put on hold. Now it seems like you're seeing politicians on both sides of the aisle realizing that this is an opportunity to potentially get people back to work. It would seem at first glance, Chris, that this is an opportunity for the coatings industry, both certainly manufacturers of these materials, but also applicators, that if you finally get a big infrastructure bill to move forward, that this might be a nice way, certainly to stimulate the economy, but especially this particular industry, that could give a jolt once we get to this summer if the virus is under control. Do you have any thoughts or optimism on that? Because at least to me, I'm far from an expert, but it seems like something that if that bill finally got done, there's a lot of coating manufacturers that could benefit from that demand.
Yeah, great point. We obviously follow this very closely. And the short answer to the question is it would be welcome, certainly from Carboline and I'm sure my competitors. Anything made out of steel or concrete is good for us. And certainly our customers, who are by and large the applicators of coatings onto those substrates, I'm sure would welcome it. So it would certainly get a vote from us in terms of rapid growth and return to kind of some sort of normalcy. But I'll go back to what I said a moment ago. For me, at least in our segmentation of business, the bigger driver is crude oil. If crude oil remains in the low 20s, an infrastructure package certainly will be welcome and will help, but it won't solve our problems. Mm. And we're tied to oil everywhere, whether I like it or not. Here in the U.S., Canada, across Europe, in China, our rail business, our marine business, there's implications. So that's got to get rectified. And then certainly anything on top of that, we would welcome with open arms. There's going to be a backlog, for sure, of work that just been postponed. But a stimulus package on top of that certainly would accelerate and be welcomed.
He's Chris Tierney, President and Chief Operating Officer at Carboline. Chris, any final thoughts as far as speaking to people in the industry on where we go from here, what the next month or two may look like?
I would only say to all of our listeners, whether they're customers, keen observers, competitors, at the end of the day, we're all people, and business is important, but no more important than your health. So everyone should do their bit to help the community and get past this, stay safe, and where we can help each other. After that, I think we'll let the market decide where we all go.
Sounds good. Chris, thank you so much for coming on.
Ben, pleasure. Thank you.
Excellent insight there from Chris Tierney, President and Chief Operating Officer at Carboline, where they produce a wide range of coatings, linings, and fireproofing materials. They're based in St. Louis, Missouri, but they have manufacturing locations all over the world. As Chris mentioned, they have a lot of exposure to Asia, and that's one reason why he was a unique resource for this COVID-19 series as we try and gauge the impact on business and try and plot the best path forward. Carboline is a company that knew about this in the very early stages based on their exposure to China and Asia, and so that makes them a resource, hopefully, whether you're a customer, a keen observer, a competitor, whatever it may be, hopefully their experiences can help all of us as we try and decide what the best path forward is for this industry as we try and bounce back from the ongoing COVID-19 crisis and the associated economic fallout that should be still coming, as Chris mentioned, in the coming weeks and even months. So we thank Chris again for coming on, and we also thank you for listening. If you want more content before our next episode, yes, there will be more in the days and weeks ahead. You won't have to wait very long. We have an ongoing interview series, both Coatings Pro and Materials Performance, talking to experts across protective coatings, as well as corrosion control, talking to the various leaders in those industries, trying to plot where we go from here. We'll have more of a podcast format in the days and weeks ahead, but if you want more content before then, yes, there are many ways you can get it. Certainly social media, you can search for each magazine's individual handles, but also our websites, coatingspromag.com and materialsperformance.com. That's how you can get daily news updates, everything going on with the COVID-19 pandemic as it pertains to your industry. Again, coatingspromag.com and materialsperformance.com. Beyond that, if you would be kind enough to subscribe to the podcast, if you have not already, wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, Google, Spotify, so on and so forth, you can probably find us because Nace International, this is the overall podcast brand. We have a lot of reach, so we should be on your platform of choice. Just please subscribe if you have not already. Leave us a positive review, and that's how you can get episodes right when they come out, even before we post them to the aforementioned websites or social media accounts that, if you're not already following us at, I strongly encourage and urge you to do so. Once again, I'm Ben Dubose. Thanks, as always, to you guys for joining us, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Nace International, your home for coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic and what it means for the corrosion control industry.